State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us from his office on Beacon Hill this time for our next edition of Tacky Talkie. Tacky.
Hey Joe, good to see you. And once again, welcome to the State House. As you all know, I do actually do show up for work these days.
We never had a doubt, Tacky. No matter where you are, you're working, we know.
Well, as the year starts, I'm hoping perhaps as the Speaker and the Senate President goes through rules debate, the rumor around the building is joint rules debate will start next week, that we'll have a calendar book which will give us some ideas of what our schedule looks like. Thereby, we can actually plan perhaps vacation, work around the holidays, obviously, as you wear July 4th is a big holiday, Memorial Day is a big holiday. Calendar generally dictates our availability to work around those things. And also, I'd like a chance to go to conferences. We've done at least one remote visit. I would like the opportunity to do more of those down the road.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that actually. Yeah.
I had a great time and gave you all a bit of insight on places I go to learn about other things. This is a continuing education class, I like to put it. And, but we're waiting for the joint rules to be settled. We'll have committees as a result, and then both the House and Senate can begin the process of appointing members to committees once the rules have been agreed on by the two branches, which, again, we'll each have our own rules debate. And then there'll be a House Senate Conference Committee that will lead the rules compromise, and then we'll get assignments. So as you can imagine, the entire building is eagerly waiting for their assignments to committees. And obviously people hope we'll see something by Valentine's Day, but I've tried to predict this before and been wrong more than once.
Yeah, so I guess folks are kind of in limbo, right? So are you kind of quasi in your old committee right now?
Essentially, yes. I mean, you lose all your titles, right? I mean, you're no longer a chair, no longer a vice chair, no longer a leader until the positions are been pointed to and approved by the Democratic caucus. So, the Speaker's office, will send us a list of what the appointments are, and then it's really perfunctionary at that point that the caucus will gather together and vote as a slate to approve the recommendations. This isn't quite like Congress. You've probably seen in the papers where both parties have members soliciting and lobbying their colleagues in individual caucus to try to get themselves appointed as chair of different committees and vice chairs and subcommittee chairs and leadership positions. And those are obviously closed door caucuses, but members would lobby to say, I want to be vice chair of X or Y. And then you would lobby your caucus to say, can I have your vote? And then to try to win a chairmanship on the floor or in the caucus room more accurately to do that. And this doesn't happen up here. We don't actually engage in a massive lobbying effort to try to win caucus votes. Can you imagine the chaos of that at our level?
Yeah, so over 400 members lobbying.
It gets a little crazy. So, but obviously everyone gets to make their case to the speaker about what they are looking to do, what committees they want to be on, why they should go to these committees. The Republicans will make their appointments rather quickly because it's much smaller body. It's only 25 of them. As a result, they are on a lot more committees than House members are, Democratic members are.
Right, because they're spread much more thinly, yeah.
But it is by ratio. So, there's less Republicans, but the guaranteed minimum seats on each committee.
I see.
We got that factor. They got to sort out. And, not everyone's going to be happy. And speaker's very aware that they're going to disappoint people. And it's up to them to see how they have to manage people's disappointments.
Right, and I could bet it could be an opportunity for folks to try something new too that they haven't done before. You never know.
That's not uncommon. Very, you're absolutely right. It's not uncommon. People will go around, try policy matter. They initially think their professional life is the choice for a committee, but they're on more than one committee. And then, like your second term, you realize, well, why am I sitting on a committee where I have an enormous amount of knowledge on? Why don't I go to a committee where I have don't have a lot of knowledge on and try to learn something new? And that is largely encouraged
Yeah.
around here, that you should move to committees where it's quite foreign policy to you in terms of like never seen before, very foreign to you, and then proceed to brush up with all kinds of new things and opportunities.
Yeah, I can say that. It's like changing careers, you know, and doing something completely different than you've never done before. And you never know. You might be able to bring something new to that different career.
Absolutely. And if you're not a chair, you generally get 3 to 4 committees, depending on the circumstances, which, you get a, you can have a large diversity of committee topics, which gives you a lot of, frankly, mental stimulation.
Yep.
And there's a lot coming at you at once. So, obviously, I'm hoping for a chairmanship, as you know. It seems to be, I was very confident there will be one, but I never think that way. But the real question is what?
Taking nothing for granted.
I never take anything for granted. The question is what chair is available? And I do not know what they're going to do. The House and Senate could merge committees, dissolve committees, create new committees. Yeah, I've never seen this many creation and dissolution of committees in the last 6 years. I've never seen this often occur. I'm used to the old days when things laid in static for like 8, 10 years at a time.
Yeah, interesting. What do you attribute that to, Tacky? Just new blood?
Partly COVID.
Oh, okay.
COVID had forced the creation of committees that became more temporary and permanent, thankfully,
Sure.
such as the Emergency Preparation Committee, which still exists for the moment, but was originally the COVID-19 Emergency Committee. We had a government funding oversight committee because of all the ARPA money coming in. The committees dedicated to that. The ARPA money is now gone because it had to be consumed by the beginning of this year. So that's now irrelevant. We had an export committee, which was probably not a good idea because we didn't know what it was actually going to do. So we got rid of that committee. And then there's a little quirky thing in the Senate where every Democrat is in a leadership position. So every Democrat in the Senate gets a chairmanship or a leadership position. Very rarely does not happen. I've only seen it in my life twice. Once is when Bill Keating, when he was a state senator, took on Billy Budger for president and lost. And he was reduced to committee on counties and a broom closet. No joke. The
Wow.
Senate President Bulger put him in a closet. Not your desk in the hallway like Ed Markey, but close enough. And then,
Oh, that's never heard that story before. That's interesting.
yeah, and then Ed Markey, not Ed Markey, sorry, Diane Wilkerson, when she committed an ethics violation, had her committee chair stripped. For a term as a response to the result of her tax her, I think it was tax fraud. That's what they got her on. So I know she got caught later on for accepting well basic kickbacks and bribes, but the first time she was actually lost her chairmanship insurance, I believe, if I remember correctly, over a tax evasion issue.
I
So.
see.
And sometimes, House members lose the chairmanships, but they get rotated around. But I try to remember one that actually was like a violation midterm, and I can't think of one in recent
Yeah, I can't either. So interesting. Okay. So stay tuned again, still.
memory. Tacky's ancient history. He sometimes gets the names mixed up on the first try, but I've been around to remember all these stories.
Since you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Or I lived through those stories
Oh,
too.
I lived through them, right? Exactly, and come out the other side. Since you brought up how the state's dealing with federal funding, let's talk about the impact on the state from the new administration in Washington.
Well, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the news reports, everyone, about this, but the President Trump seems to like to do executive orders by very short sentences.
Yes, basically freezing all federal grants,
Yeah,
period.
easy to read, impossible to interpret.
Right.
So this has had a lot of effect on all of us at state and local government, as well as not-for-profit agencies that serve you. For example, it affects the entire community, Quincy Community Action Program, or the CAPs, are in chaos because they do everything from Head Start programs to low-income assistance programs and other parts of the state to do financial literacy assistance, among other things. English classes are affected with various not-for-profits, but also education institutions have grants of research and all kinds of other relative programs there. At our level of government, it affects a lot of state operated programs on behalf of the federal government. So you may not know this, but unemployment benefits, Department of Unemployment Assistance, DUA, that is not a state-funded program. That is a federal reimbursement program. The feds pay for those services that we as a state provide employees. We hire them, we operate them, they're on the state pension system. But that's federally funded employees. The feds give us the money, we hire employees, we operate your unemployment program, right?
Yeah, you're the administrator, essentially.
That's exactly it. And when they say, cut off funding, well, that means, well, I know that just cuts your unemployment business, right? And I know they're problematic. We do get constituents calling it. I'm very aware of the constituent calls associated with this agency. But there may not be an agency left because if they do that. Same thing with your Medicare, which caused a lot of confusion. They insist that Medicare, Medicaid's not affected. But the states operate Medicare and Medicaid programs on behalf of the federal government. It is MassHealth, because people rally against MassHealth saying, we want Medicare. I'm like, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, it's state operation, but also helps fund things like Medicare fraud. Our investigative units all over the place trying to catch fraud. And fraud happens. Eventually the law is going to catch up with you eventually, and it does. So that affects things like, nursing homes. You saw Meals on Wheels programs. It was complete chaos. I was getting phone calls from folks at home, not sure what this means, and I didn't know what it means either. And at our level, we do a lot of federal programs, with Medicare and unemployment being easily the top two in programs we do for the feds. So there's also DPH stuff, there's educational stuff. I mean, it's a laundry list of issues that's probably, I'm going to say probably like 30-ish percent of the state budget is some form of program to the state operate.
30%, that is a huge amount.
Yeah, because Medicare alone represents like 28 to 30% of the budget, and half of that is state funded because we do a 50% match. So right off the bat, that's about $15 billion, right? And then you throw in unemployment, education, through the DPH, you start throwing in all the other stuff mushed together. Yeah, I can see 15% doubling, somewhere 25, 30%. I can see how that would work once you start compiling it all. And it's a lot of different chunks of change. It isn't like, Medicare, which is, $15 billion, right? It's lots of different pieces that move together. Actually, I won't know the actual numbers yet because until we get closer to the House Ways and Means budget recommendation, I actually would have a much more accurate number with
Right. We have the governor's proposal, but that's just a proposal right now.
Yeah, because the number fluctuates because people, sadly, we get off Medicare, you most likely have passed away. And then, you come on Medicare, that, you come into this new generation of and so on. My generation, Gen X, is going to be the next big deluge onto Medicare. We're getting to that age as a generation block. So, but we'll see what the real numbers are. We'll talk about that in about 2 months-ish, maybe. When we get a little closer to that.
So we should say that the ban has since been rescinded because of all the chaos, right?
The ban's been rescinded, but not rescinded. The mixed messaging from the White House continues to cause concern all over the country because we're not getting sufficient clarity where they say, well, the ban's in effect, but not in effect. And if you're an individual that, this isn't really, again, we talk about politics in here all the time. And how, it's Donald Trump and his Republican Party. It's two different things in the way I perceive it. And I think a lot of political analysts are looking at it that way as well. You can vote Republican, but this is kind of a different scenario with President Trump. And so I mean, if you're a recipient of one of these programs and they cut yours, you have no one to blame but yourself for voting the person you vote for. You really have no.
It's like deja vu all over again.
It is. I actually, and I know this sounds crazy, my Democratic colleagues may scoff at this when I say this, but when you're going a second time around on a job like that because you had a chance to win the job the first time around. And yes, the economy is different, the global stage is different, but it's still a job that has a lot of basic functions. I had very hopeful expectations. If I agree or disagree with the president, is irrelevant, but I had very hopeful expectations that it would be a very smooth operation early on because he kind of did this once, right? And I was hoping it'd be a very smooth opening with him, because while I applaud the desire to take initiatives and show he can take action, and how Congress is just immobilized and incompetent because of the immobility, and the president can take charge. I get it. I understand that. But I really did hope that he would have more grasp of federal government functionality to push forward, agree or disagree, his initiative in a more smooth manner.
Of course, the other big question with regards to here in Massachusetts is what happens with the immigration policy and how that impacts folks here in Massachusetts.
I say this last time, and I'll say this again. I mean, if you're a victim of a crime by someone that's an undocumented individual that commits a crime against you, and you find out that they're going to deport the person as a form of punishment, they get to walk free. That's it. So if you have been victimized, your family member, let's say, has been heavily victimized, and you want justice, American justice now is you get back to your home country. If they take you back, if there's a reparation or reciprocal situation, the country will take people back. And since they committed no crime in the country of origin, they get to walk free in the street. And it's that simple, people. That's their punishment. They go home free, as opposed to continue to be subject to the American justice system. And the law that just passed in Congress, to allow people of minor crimes to be deported potentially. Okay, I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, if it's not a violent offender, there's no major injuries to people, all right. I mean, I can see that. I am very concerned about much more serious offenses and how justice can't be served. And they get to walk home. They get to get sent home at your taxpayer dime, and go home and like, cool. They murdered your kid. I get to go home now.
Or like you said before, also, do these countries want those people?
Well, that's correct, right? Venezuela is a big problem. We have like cut off ties with them. So we're going to have to detain them in the United States anyway. You saw last night, and they're going to send people to Guantanamo Bay. Not entirely clear exactly who these people are because there's no really inventory that the news media is trying to get their hands on. I do fully expect private prisons, that your taxpayers are going to be paying for a lot of private prisons as they kind of ramp this up, as opposed to just, so-called putting people in cages. I think it'll be much more professionalized than that. So private prisons are going to make a lot of money. And then, you got some countries that you just want some dignity on returning their citizens. Brazil has already expressed their concerns about how people are treated. I think that is not unfair. People should be treated with dignity. If you're a murderer, I really have no sympathy for you, or someone that commits heinous crimes against folks. But if you're here and you're undocumented and you get nabbed and you get sent home, I think people should be treated with some level of dignity. I don't think that's called for. People may not be aware or listening, but a lot of undocumented have been sent back to countries where there's repatriation agreements by commercial flights for decades. This is not new. I just think the Democratic Party does a very poor job, extremely poor job communicating this. And I think Democratic politics internally is just a small group of folks that are like the Republican Party or trying to drive a big agenda. And it makes Washington, D.C. Politicians cower in fear on talking about serious issues like deportation, like adults, and they just can't do it. Because I think if you look at all the numbers, this is it isn't like things didn't happen. But then if you do something just stupid like the migrant crisis that we're all facing, but from the Biden administration, overtakes the issue regarding deportation and better immigration policy. I mean, you hear the states over and over again. The states are mad at the Biden administration about how they handle it. And it was just plain up stupid, how they managed that. So, we paid a price at our level. So, I do expect, there'll be more conversation and about this, on the national stage. It sometimes misses the media. It kind of is a blink of an eye, depending on the news outlet. or they
Right.
just they like to sensationalize this because some people seem giddy about the idea of watching people in handcuffs. I mean, I don't subscribe to that kind of propaganda or people feel that, ooh, this is great. I think that's just a good taste.
Yeah, well, although to his credit, Congressman Lynch supported the Laken and Riley Act, which is was interesting. And came right out and said it's because the immigration system is broken on the federal level.
Yeah, and it's really targeting, like I said, theft and other minor crimes,
Yeah.
right? So that makes a bit more sense, particularly when it comes to those victims of the crimes committed by the undocumented. Restitution would be very difficult to hold anyway. If someone stole, petty theft, shoplifting, I mean, restitution is basically trying to recover the property, right? And
Right.
that's impossible on smaller crimes. And there was a bipartisan vote down there on this particular issue. And but there's no guarantee, like I said, a shoplifter becomes a murderer.
Right.
That
Exactly.
applies to all of us, not just
That's
undocumented.
right. Yeah.
And I think that's the way that people kind of make the mistake, right? I mean, I promise you, I said before, all of us have committed a minor civil offense at some point in our lives that was not caught by a police officer. It doesn't
Oh yes,
mean
the jaywalking.
walking, running a stop sign. I mean, come on, people. Let's be honest about ourselves, right? But and you may have an indiscretion at some point as a kid who did take something, but charges weren't pressed.
Right.
Does that mean you're going to be a criminal later?
No, of
No,
course not. Yeah.
no. And our juvenile system in Massachusetts really, emphasize more now, and it still needs to do more regarding, rehabilitation, better education, and try to help, not necessarily, constantly scolding you, but try to show you there's a better way in life.
Yeah. What we're going to talk about at some point, and because you brought up the sensational journalism, it made me think of it. Clickbait.
It was clickbait media. I think, you and I are now old enough to remember the days where the State House was crawling with reporters physically. If you visit a State House up on the fourth floor, on the West Wing side of the State House, there's the press room. They actually have a very sizable press room. And I remember as a young man sending press advisors and press releases up and dropping them in mailboxes and people's desks. And I got to meet people for the first time in the media. And it was a lot of fun meeting these folks because they had a lot to teach you about how media works, as well as actually their own insights because they've been doing this longer than I have when I was a young man. About what the history of different things happen around here. Boston Globe had its own office, the Boston Herald an office, WBZ Radio had an office in the basement for live transmission. News crews were regularly parked in the State House with their cameras. Those days are gone.
Yeah, I
It
know.
is a barren wasteland of reporters up here. And State House News Service, as you guys get at QATV as well. And you see it in the Quincy Sun and the Patriot Ledger is basically sold news to those groups, while actual reporters or editors actually being in the State House to review the material, and just like the AP. And we live in a world.
Actually, the AP just recently pulled out of the State House.
Yeah, that's very troubling, because I think it's very important to have the AP here. In all seriousness, I really do. People think the politicians are afraid of the media, and I think that is their mistake if they are. But I do think it's very important to have the media always near you, because it's good for us to have ability to communicate and also ability to get a message out. And clickbait is now the media because it's been going on for a long time, but it's most benevolent that if it's not something that people put eyes on a website, you can't get advertising dollars.
Exactly. Yeah, it's believe me, it's frustrating for many in the media too, because it paints us all with one broad brush, and it's just not true.
Yeah, and the headline becomes designed for clickbait as opposed to actually like reflecting the substance of the internal article. And then people talk about liberal media. I'm like, no, this is a clickbait media. I don't care what your political affiliation is. I do not like the fact that people in a manner that implies that their biases are intentional to mislead you. It's designed to try to use writing style to attract you to continue to read more stuff of the same writing style that appeals that part of the brain that makes you think that, you are a like mind.
Right, because they can sell those clicks essentially to advertisers.
And I don't, I make it clear to people, it's like watch Fox News and you look at the news team there, they are all basically models. They're like gorgeous. Why? It's in, and they bring this up to people and they'll look at me and they think about it for a second when I say it. It's because they're attractive looking people you want to look at. Now it's more important, that's more important than the substance coming out of it, right? That's how they get you. Other news media that does not prescribe to the supermodel, reporter, doesn't nearly get as much attention despite the subject matter and the being they're accused of being, misleading. Again, appearances do matter, right? That's important. And the White House press corps, I think, is incredibly important, and I think they, should continue to be embedded inside Congress and inside the White House. And I think, all of us in elected life should be subject to hard questions from the media, including like you and I have played cat and mouse a couple of times. As I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to ask me.
Yeah, but as yes, hard questions, but fair. You have to be fair.
Yeah, I agree with that. And those of you who actually read my commentaries in places like The Globe, I do give some fun quotes. I won't lie. But at no point did I ever lie to the press. I just tell them what I know to the best of my ability. And, they choose the words that come out of my mouth. But, I always felt it was very important from when back to the days I was a staffer that if you come up with a question as a press person, it's my responsibility to try to educate the press individual to the best of my abilities about what I know. Here's the documentation. Here's where you can follow up. Here's the various other news media where we got the information from. And you can make your own determination how the story goes from there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And professional journalists, you should not know what their political affiliation is, by their reporting or by their writing. You really shouldn't know. It shouldn't play a factor. And there's a way to tell, when they're biased and not. So if they're doing their jobs correctly, it should not reflect in the reporting.
No, I agree with you completely because if you look at other news media around the world, they, they all participate in some little clickbait, but how they present journalism, their use of adjectives tend to be substantially less. You don't see as many adjectives and adverbs. So you all know I watch CNA on YouTube live from Singapore, their news, and I would tell you, it is considerably more bland in presentation. They look awesome, obviously, because you have to be on television, right? You and I both face radio, but I mean, it's considerably straight to the point,
Yes.
and they don't use a lot of adverbs or adjectives unless there's a clear visual that they can show you. Like when you like in India, they had a massive tragedy at the religious festival, a stampede essentially, and the adjectives reflect the video of a tragedy.
Right. Because that's not clickbait, that's reality. Yeah.
It's reality because they have the footage to show you,
Right.
and it's not difficult that you will confirm the adjective or adverb they use. So, this is the world we live in, and I express a lot more caution about, what I read. And everyone should express more caution, not because of your political affiliation or your personal beliefs, but because these actual words they put in there to attract you or excite an emotion is largely unnecessary. And this, includes distraction politics. President Trump is a master communicator. I mean, I would not deny that. But he says stuff out there, and it instantly becomes clickbait for the media because people want to read the sensational statements. That includes media people and the celebrity media, but that's their job, right? Media, celebrities want attention, right? They do peculiar things that you guys are. I don't. You guys all know. I don't have to talk about. But you see that also with commentators, people who are not elected officials, right? You got. Sometimes you get editorial columnists. Sometimes you get leaders of industry, people in corporate America. And then you got, advocacy stuff all learned this marketing technique of clickbait.
Yeah.
Want to be seen over and over again. And the more outrageous you presentation of your message creates more eyeballs and incites some kind of emotion.
And folks, I wish they wouldn't forget, commentators, opinion columns, it's not, that is not news. That is somebody's comment on a piece of information. That's somebody's opinion on a piece of information. It's not, that's not news. That's not, when in the definition of news, that's just their opinion. That's not the facts.
Yeah, and they can be wrong.
And they can be wrong and have been.
Yeah, as I read occasionally, well, because I kind of like shied away from the opinion columns, but when I read the columns, I'm reading and I'm like, that is factually incorrect. And I don't want to call out the columnist, but it's clearly clickbait column. And I'm reading this thing like, you are just this is completely wrong on the article you're writing, or your column you're writing. Because you're writing from a degree of ignorance. But as a reader, unless you're like me who actually knows what they're trying to get at on this particular subject matter that I'm reading, you assume that columnist is correct. And that is what scares me.
Okay. Well, you're not going to get that here on QATV, folks. That's for sure.
Joe is actually brutal to me. You should see before we go on this thing. It's just absolutely tough, but again, this is more of a casual conversation, and it's easy because I'm like, on the record, for example, which I do encourage people to watch. I mean, they only got a very short time span. A lot of interviewees are 10 minutes. You got to get through this thing quickly. And even the political commentary with Marion Marsh and Rob Gray, which I think is great couple on top of on television to watch. They only got so much time, and you notice they get to the point quick. I mean, both Marion and Rob don't like mince words. They just get to the point fast. And I think both of them are pretty candid about their own political party, whether you agree or disagree with their statements. I think they're pretty candid about it.
Which is great, which is perfectly fine. Yeah, great. Yep.
And I get their positions to defend, and I'm okay with that, and you should be okay with that too as a watcher. But you don't get that anymore, right? You don't have people don't watch PBS News, NewsHour, what's the name of the
Oh, the Dallaire report.
Yeah, then they report and others, those things have gone to the wayside. And even the big newspapers are getting thinner. And newspapers are now afraid to actually endorse candidates, which I find perplexing. They have fear to do that. This isn't about political, this is about journalism, political stuff. This is just straight up fear.
Yeah, the landscape has certainly changed for sure. There's so much consolidation in the media. It's basically two or three big companies that control 80 or 90% of the outlets.
And the First Amendment rights from the Supreme Court gives media, news media, enormous flexibility in their journalism, a lot of flexibility. And for example, newspapers aren't taxed because of violating the First Amendment, right? The government should not make money off the First Amendment in that way. I kind of lost my train of thought a teeny bit here. We were talking about at one time the type of clickbait. That what was it again? I'm trying to think of it because I had it and lost it for a second.
Oh, we're talking about the op-ed pieces, the columnists, the commentators.
And then it'll come to me later, I promise you, after the show's done. I'm like, it's but yeah, I mean, it's the stupid Google algorithm.
Oh, yes.
We were talking about that at one point and how the algorithm makes you go to see stuff that you want to see because that's the clickbait of how they make the money.
Yes, it's filtered for you, folks. It's not all that's available. It's just filtered for you.
And what scares me also, it's filtering you to blogs.
Yes.
We're aware of some Quincy blogs out here that says particularly several city government. Some of it is we the media like the Ledger and the Sun and yourself confirm is correct, and some of the stuff is more opinionated, but it actually shows up as a news media to the equivalent of Boston Globe on your feed. That is frightening.
I agree. That is frightening. Consider the source, I always say.
Yeah, and then look at some stuff because we get some constituent emails. I'm scratching my head, so I do my Google search trying to find out what the constituent's talking about. And I look at the news source that came out of that is not a newspaper. That is some of the stuff out there is not actual meals.
Right. No, it takes on a life of its own. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's columns. It's a person out there with an opinion, and the internet allows people to present themselves as news media. But you may not realize this, folks, but at one time, 50 odd years ago, you could have printed your newspaper on the street and sell it. First right to do that. Now, whether that material you put in those papers, factory, you can just make stuff up. But people want to buy it, they'll buy it, right? And go back 100 years, and you had a bunch of little papers running around supporting or opposing political candidates, but people bought a lot of different ones to read, whether you agree or disagree with it. And you see new sources like Round News, for example, is one out there trying to do algorithms to try to determine the biases of the different media outlets, so you can try to make a determination on your own whether these outlets are, which way they swing, based on an algorithm they're still working on. And I think with the advent of artificial intelligence, you're going to see more algorithms out there trying to discern which media is actual news, which ones are news using adjectives and adverbs to incite a certain biases. And but the algorithms out there is all clickbait. And Google and YouTube and Meta, or Facebook, X, Snapchat, TikTok, if that's still going to be around, which is a fun conversation itself, all designed to make money for themselves. They could care less about politics. They could care less. Well, they do care about politics and how it affects their business, but
That's right.
they could care less about your politics. They could care less about your personal beliefs and views.
Yeah, no, what it's yeah, it's whatever you want, they'll give you if you'll pay for it.
Yeah, and it reinforces your feeling that you are in the right. And that's okay. But it now closes the window to the fact that there are other people out there that think differently.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, use a lot of sources, when you're trying to get information. It's readily available today. Use a lot of legitimate sources to gather your information.
Yeah, and my personal reading, I cut out a lot of adjectives and adverbs. I just bypass that part of it. I see a sentence that has a whole lot of enunciation. I just blow over that part of the article now and just move on to the next paragraph, because it's now you're just wasting my eye time.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's not years ago, when dinosaurs roamed the earth when I was in school, we were taught it's called the AP method of journalism. So it's in it, in it, and it eliminates all of that extraneous, descriptive language to just focus on the facts.
And unfortunately, I actually get more calls from BU journalist students about actually policy I've been working on than I do from our local media.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's
That's
actually,
actually that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that, actually.
yeah, I get at least three calls from BU journalism specifically as part of their homework, the project, to talk about some public policies that I've been working on. And we do our best to try to educate them and try to see how that works out.
Yeah. That gives me hope. Good. I'm glad to hear
Yeah,
that.
no, I mean, you guys may not realize the number of non-conventional outlets in the sense of student projects that actually do get published on the internet, or at least their local papers, for the student population to read. So we do a lot of it up here too. Another thing that the media started doing is question by email as opposed to like a phone call. I suppose I get we sometimes will be forced to write a statement, like Beacon Hill roll calls, one where I'm not doing an actual interview. We have to come up with a couple of like sentences for them to blurbs in their laundry list of news, because they do just like little blurbs of bills up here. And it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing for you to be able to get some snapshots of news. But I mean, our preference has always been that, if it seems like a good interview, we should do the interview as opposed to just writing carefully written words, as opposed to engaging in a conversation back and forth. Because you may be surprised by this. I do care about what the reporter also thinks in the article they're trying to write. And sometimes they actually already know the answer before it comes out of my mouth.
Yes, right. Yes. That's yeah, a good reporter should actually.
Yeah, because they already had the facts in place before the interview began. I'm having a chat. I'm like, Well, clearly you know more than I do. I mean, I'm not sure why you need to talk to me at all.
Right. Well, because they're just looking for something to accentuate the story.
And also to validate their facts.
Yes, that too. Yeah.
Because they can't validate the facts. They would need an elected official like myself or an expert in the field, to confirm whether the facts they've collected is accurate.
Right. Yep. So, bottom line, folks, just be aware of where you're getting information.
Yeah, I'm extremely cautious. I mean, I avoid the talking heads on cable news. I think it's worthless, personal level. You guys only watch news from around the country. I'm sorry, outside the country, because I see how they look at us and what they perceive as important news. I mean, believe it or not, Channel 5 WCVB News makes it to Asia every so often when we have a ginormous snowstorm.
No, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I mean, they will buy. They have to pay for the media because the rights belong to
Yeah,
WCVB.
that's the
But
Hearst company, I think. Yeah.
yeah, and but foreign media will buy clips, and some clips we never saw here. Like, I mean, remember that massive snowstorm in Stoughton last year? I don't remember seeing those clips, but they actually were clips that were used overseas.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. See, it is a business just like anything else. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I get it. Foreign media does not have the ability to talk about a snowstorm, but if you're in Southeast Asia and they see 3 feet of snow in Massachusetts, they're like, wow.
It's like us watching a volcano erupt in Hawaii.
Yeah, which, if it's, sadly, if people lose their homes, I mean, obviously you feel terrible about it, but also at the same time, it's a volcano erupting. You've never seen it before.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was Hawaii, when I was Hawaii talking to one of the legislators, he used the words, we asked him, what's your biggest problem? His words were lava flow.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're looking at this legislator like backed up a second, like, did you say lava flow? Yeah, that's my biggest constituent problem right now, lava flow.
Yeah, that's they actually have lava zones, based on the danger level of being impacted by a lava flow.
Yeah, part of changing topics briefly, one of the fun thing while talking to other legislators around the country is that all have different constituent issues.
Yeah.
And sometimes words come out and you're just like, well, I'm kind of happy this is not my constituent problem.
Exactly.
Don't know, but you're all listening, but imagine if like you're a politician and you're like, oh, lava flow is my biggest problem. And I'm like,
There you go. It's a big country with a lot of different issues.
Yeah, I got to do some more around the country conferences at some point, because that's how we meet other legislators. And when training sessions or things together, and it's a lot of fun just making friends and talking about things.
Sure.
And National Conference state legislators are coming this August. It'll be another opportunity for us to not actually go anywhere. They have to come to us.
Oh, happening in Boston?
Yeah, August 3rd to 5th, I think it's. I have to check the calendar again, but it's going to be that first few days in August to be here. And being a host of the National Conference State Legislators is on the legislature to be good hosts. And we want to showcase not necessarily the great things about Massachusetts and what we do right, and what lessons we learned from things that didn't go right, but also it's like hosting any other guests in your home, for example, right? You want to make sure that their requests are accommodated, and you want to put your best foot forward, and you always want to look awesome, right? So one of my, obviously, Asian caucus stuff, and we're going to have to host Asian caucus of state legislators, and I am not going to be embarrassing. We are going to do something that makes us look really good in front
Of
of them.
course, yeah.
We're working towards that. It's work in progress. So, but again, it's 2 months away, but the planning is important. Got to get the planning out of the way
Yeah.
early so it's easy to execute as we move forward.
Maybe you can bring some of them to Quincy for Quincy 400.
Yeah, maybe. They're packed. It's actually two parts. The first weekend in before the conference starts, and the third is actually all the caucuses of various forms, not just Asian, but also all the other caucuses have the organizational meetings, and they have their seminars, and they proceed to have the social hours. And then there's a bit of an influx situation on one of those days before the start of the conference, which I don't know what the answer is yet. So I suspect that when I get to like early July, we might be doing some pivoting.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll talk about that then.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to interview folks, I suppose. I mean,
Yeah, might be interesting actually.
yeah, once I get some more details, how we're
Okay,
doing so
right.
far. It's a long way, folks, longest way.
It's on its way. Yesterday was the start of the Lunar New Year, yes?
Yeah, happy year to Snake. Obviously in the State House, as you see, and we had an informal session to read into the record of the House, recognizing the year to Snake. Snakes are transformative. I always like the fact that you go from a giant mythical dragon, the biggest serpent in Asian culture, Chinese culture. A lot of cultures in Asia have a type of serpent dragon involved. And we go to the opposite, which is a smallest serpent, which is a snake. Again, and actually, a dragon in different Asian cultures don't have giant wings. They actually look like giant serpents. So they're flying somehow, the mythical creatures. Well, of course, they can fly, the mythical creatures, right? They all live in the water, they live in caves. I mean, it's just like European mythical dragons, right? But I know it's transformative because you go from this ginormous mythical creature to, quite frankly, a humble little snake. And the story goes, as the animals come to the Jade Emperor's party and get the designation as part of the Lunar New Year, which month, the snake couldn't get across the ginormous river, so it snuck himself onto the horse.
Oh, interesting.
It's different stories about how it snuck onto the horse, whether it be under a hoof or on its mane, but the snake figured out it's not going to get across this raging river. So, as opposed to asking for permission, the snake just kind of like snuck on. So the dragon had got there because dragon, and the dragon did good deeds, so it slowed it down because the dragon should have got there first because mythical creature. But it was doing some good deeds. The dragon arrived, and then the snake jumped off the horse onto the palace entrance way to the palace before the horse did, thereby securing its designation as the sixth animal in the zodiac. So, there's, I take a grain of salt. Zodiacs were fun. For me, it was just fun. But it's a transformative year. Snakes represent transformation, and it could be good or bad transformation. And, snakes are generally passionate folks. They have a lot of wisdom. They're very introspective. They have a lot of observational abilities. This is kind of the so-called traits of a snake. You don't have to take it too serious. But all different animals have so-called traits. And this year is a wood. A snake, I believe. The Chinese believe in five elements. It's earth, fire, water, metal, and wood. Unlike the European concept of five elements, which is just earth, fire, water, and air, the four elements. The Chinese elements take out air as an element and add wood and metal.
Interesting.
So I was born in the year of the ox, and actually born in the year of the water ox, which I like to refer to as the water buffalo. And it comes with its own set of personality traits, which again, you
Right.
should never take too seriously. It's just fun.
It's fun, yeah.
Just fun. So, then if you're born in the, my case, the year of ox, and it's not a year of snake, there's a horoscope associated with that as well, but specifically your year. You can drill down deeper in the internet. If you go down that rabbit hole about your element, if you go to a rabbit hole deeper in the internet, you can look up the hour you were born.
Wow, really?
Yeah, if you really want to go deep into the rabbit hole on the internet, on like your whole Asian or your lunar horoscope, it can be fun, but you're going down a rabbit hole, folks.
Yep, you're not going to come out anytime soon. He's going
No, you
to
don't.
set
Once it's time.
aside a whole day for it.
No, absolutely. Again, I think it's fun, but you're there. You're going in for a while, and you start thinking about like, "Ooh, my friend is this." And you
Right.
start looking
Something
under.
fun at cocktail parties.
Oh God, you just don't come out of it. And then if you there are books out there that actually matches the lunar year horoscopes against the solar horoscopes,
Oh.
which is the stars, right? You got the
Yes, the
Pisces.
Capricorn, Aries, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. People born in Gemini in February, I believe it's Gemini. I mean, I'm a Leo. So folks will try to match the horoscopes of the Greek world essentially
Yeah.
against the lunar ones to try to create new horoscope predictions, which at this
Oh
point
my goodness. Wow. Okay.
you should not take that seriously at all
Right.
whatsoever. But it's fun reading if you enjoy that type of thing.
Here in Quincy, it's February 16th at North Quincy High School is the Lunar New Year celebration.
It is President's Day weekend is the celebration, 11 o'clock to 3 p.m. I believe is number 37,
That's correct. Yep.
and about half of those is run by Quincy Asian Resources. Actually, more than half now.
Yes. Yep.
Again, it's a great job done by the school, the kids, staff, the volunteers, to make it a really fun day. Obviously, it's February, which is one of the snow months around here. So, I've been there in a few, post snowstorm scenarios.
Yeah.
But again, it's bringing a bit of a culture that, for folks to see. It's the Tet is what it's called to Paul from the Vietnamese community. They've had a few at BC High. I've not attended the Vietnamese Tet in a little while. The last one I went to was actually right before COVID. But they have Tet celebrations in Little Saigon, in Fields Corner, in Dorchester, and other Southeast Asians will be doing the same. The Koreans do celebrate the New Year, and a few other cultures. The Japanese actually celebrate more than one New Year because they have, the Shinto religion, they have the Buddhist religion, they have the Gregorian calendar, they also have the lunar calendar. So, depending on your belief system, you have more than one type of New Year. A lot of devout Buddhists, follow the Buddhist calendar, which is a lunar calendar as well. That happens sometime in the month of April. I don't know which moon, but it would be one of the moons in April. So, it's like to remind folks, Asian are not a monolith. It's really a lot of different cultures inside a large swath of the continent.
Yes, right. Yeah. Indian culture, certainly. Don't forget that as well. So, yeah.
Yep, you have Diwali, that was this past fall, actually in October, November. Was I think it was November, first week in November was Diwali. You have Holi coming up the spring, which is celebration of life. And then you have the Sikh culture. Sikh religion actually is part of India. There's a whole debate about whether Sikhism should be separated country from India, which is a kind of an internal debate
Yeah.
there. But Sikhism is actually the fifth biggest religion. It's not Judaism.
Interesting.
Yeah, and not surprising. I mean, this stuff is documented by folks that don't live in Asia, of which are the biggest religions, right? So, but if you look at raw numbers, Sikhism is actually the biggest ones after before Judaism. And they're the ones who wear different types of turbans that are the ceremonial knives that are often mistaken for people from the Middle East because of Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lawrence of Arabia is complete fake. It does not reflect the Middle East or
Right.
Africa correctly in any way, shape, or form. There are no turbans. Turbans are Sikh.
Well, yeah, it's like, everybody thinks Americans are Western cowboys.
That is, you be actually for those who like to travel the world, it actually never hurts to run across someone at a bar or a restaurant, and they speak English. You ask them what they think and about us, and it's you shouldn't take offense from it, because they also have media and sadly, clickbait media is global. It's not universally
Oh, for
American.
sure. Yes. Yeah.
So I mean, it's global. So. People should always ask. I mean, I remember one time in Hong Kong, we ran across an individual Scottish asking about British Brexit.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting conversations. If you know your UK stuff, I mean, you have the Welsh, the English, the Scots, and then you have the Irish, which we from Boston knows a lot of history about Ireland. And how the Scots perceive Brexit and the different point of views associated with it. And Scottish independence is running very hot this Brexit because the Scots want to stay as part of the European Union because economically it's much better for Scotland.
Right.
It's these centuries of culture regarding the desire to not be part of the English England. To have separation in Brexit, revitalize that, was talking about how his dad just actually hates the English. He was
Oh,
like,
is that right? Yeah.
oh, he despises the English. It's fascinating, the little tiny island. But you know, these different points of view and people's personal feelings, you know, different everywhere you go.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep.
And you know, it's I think it's fascinating to talk to folks
Well,
about.
it's educational, it's eye-opening, it gives you a broader perspective on our world, you know.
And also, I want to say they filter news, but I mean, how to get the news. They do watch our news on the internet, and that gives their impression of us. So, you know, think about it for a second, right? The media here is how we are portrayed overseas. There's this small world now, the internet, and you throw in things like TV shows and music and movies and literature and magazines. I mean, that shapes our how America looks to other people around the world.
Sure, yeah, that's their perception. That's all they have to go by. So, you know, that's what they're going to perceive us as, yeah.
Yeah, and Korea is a lot more, for example, has a huge cultural influence today in America because of K-pop, Gundam,
Yes.
and then you have the K-pop dramas, Squid Game, right? Obviously, it's more than just that, but I have not visited Korea in over 11 years now, but it gives you a little insight of I call slice of life stories,
Right.
soap
Yes.
operas-ish type stuff. I mean, it's not everyday life. But you get to see some of like they don't they intentionally show some parts of Korea that are you know that are historical areas in the background, so you maybe want to visit it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I'll use it as a promotional tool, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely good for tourism, right? And that's why
Yep.
you know, working you know on the film tax credit, for example, right? You know, you want more films in Massachusetts so people that watch it globally will see things like the Boston Commons, the Boston Garden. You know, TD Bank, the State House, the Hancock Building, Old State House, Paul Revere's House, the
Yeah.
Hoover Trail, the Boston Harbor, the
The
list
USS Constitution and all the things, yeah.
Cape Cod, all of Cape Cod,
Yeah.
for example, and try to encourage people to come in. Perfect Storm is still making money for Gloucester 20 plus years later. Still visit Gloucester because of that movie in the book.
Yeah, here in Quincy it was, you know, the Adamses from David McCullough's book. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm a stud.
Yep.
And that's a big part of tourism is that if people don't know you're there, they're not going to come.
That's it. Yep. You got to stand out in the crowd.
Yeah, and it does make a big difference. I mean, Japanese, for example, go to Manjuro, who's the first, we believe, is the first documented permanent citizen. From Japan, of Asia, anywhere in Asia, who's Japanese, Fairhaven, Connecticut, and they actually do tours of Enduro's house. A lot of Jap is probably actually part of a Japanese tour.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, again, I mean, if you don't know it's there, how are you going to go see it? Right?
Very true.
I want to go see elephants. I went to Chiang Mai, Thailand one year because
Neat.
it was on my to-do list. I wanted to go see you know, elephants in person in a rescue. Rescue elephants, which a lot of sadness about
Yeah.
who were rescued, and how they're trying to change, you know, elephants' perceptions and how they're treated in Thailand. But I mean, it was on my to-do list, and as a result, I stumbled upon some incredible temples and learned a lot about the city of Chiang Mai. You know, just touring around, walking around, and people like to share.
For sure. Everybody loves to talk about themselves and where they're from. Absolutely. It's the thing they know best.
Learned a lot. Had a great time. I need to visit again at some point down the road. But you know, hey, tacky vacation plans will be on hold for now. What's going on around here?
We're at the end of our hour, Jackie.
Yeah, it's thank you for the therapy session yet again. Gives me
Just
next.
consider me your bartender without the booze.
Yeah, this is the venting. Tacky just venting, right? This is my therapy. It's venting on Joe. But no, I hope you guys all enjoyed, you know, some perspective, agree or disagree. Hopefully, you know, give you a little insight about how I see the world and actually how Joe sees the world too, both of us, as we have this conversation. The world turns every day. And, you know, I tell people, you've been in politics long enough. Same stuff, different year.
Exactly.
know, but that's just me. And you know, status politics will pick up more. Legislative action will start to pick up in the next few weeks, and you know, we'll see how that stuff, believe it or not, probably commingled to what next happens to the federal government, because what they do is how I respond. I always talk about how proud I am about universal school breakfast, school lunches, and that was because the federal government stopped funding those programs.
Right. Yeah.
And we had to step up on what I think is one of the hallmark things that, you know, it sounds like a small thing to folks listening, but I think it's very important. But that's an easy example of a permanent program that will benefit children's lives.
Yes, forever. Yeah.
Yeah, that we as the legislature had to step up when the federal government left us behind. So this is a simple example of that. So we'll see what this administration does and how we navigate and respond to the issues.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what this means for the funding for the Cape Cod bridges. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and things like the CHIP Act, right? I mean,
And that too, yeah.
we're a tech state. People, I know we're biotechnology, education, tourism, but we're still technology. And there is active conversation about them suspending the CHIPS Act, which is not just semiconductors, it's about tech.
Right.
And technology is the future of our economy.
Yeah. All right, let's not go on issues now. We're out of time.
Yeah, Joe, it is lunchtime here. It's about 12:25 at this stage. So I'm at the State House in room 42. So you know where I am now. We're always very happy to receive guests. I am staffed. We're not a school holiday, so I generally encourage people to come visit sales for tours. We're in a quiet period right now, so tour guides are rarely available. We open weekdays. We have metal detectors, so be forewarned. But yeah, room 42, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the phone number. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I'm getting drowning now when people ask me to co-sponsor bills, not just advocates, but also constituents do. And we're trying to sort our way out on these requests right now. We prioritize constituent services always and always will. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. Feel free to look at where I've been. Don't use social media to reach out to me. Use the telephone or use the email, because when you start going through the rabbit hole of social media, it can be pretty tough. TackyChan.com, I'm sorry, TackyChan.org, not com, org, is our resource page. You know, we have actually a contact page there. You can find phone numbers before you call us. We have X, so-called Twitter, formerly known as Twitter. We do use that. Although we should talk about Twitter at some point and how it's becoming less of a thing that young people use as a medium, we're discovering. We're actually debating about how much we should continue this, not necessarily because of political reasons, just little because of eyeballs, right? Club,
Right.
right? And then obviously the legislature website, malegislature.gov. You can set up an account there, monitor the bills. You can read, watch our sessions, watch our public hearings, reach out to different legislators from there. And of course, yeah, Keyway TV with me and Joe on a near weekly basis. And definitely catch Joe's first thing in the morning podcast for the 10-minute updates he gives about local news.
Always good to talk to you, Techie, and a gong hei for Choi to you and your family.
Sun hei fa long, gong hei fa choy, sun hei king hong. So wish you all a very happy Lunar New Year. Wish you good health and good fortune. And may your health rise in the new Lunar New Year.